This message is a presentation of Pinnacle Baptist Church and the preaching ministry of Pastor Ray McBerry. Other messages like this are available online at pinnaclebaptist.com. The church is located at 2517 High Falls Road in Griffin, Georgia. If you're in the area, we would love for you to visit us this Sunday. Now, here's today's message.
Well, that brings us to our Sunday school lesson for today. This morning, we're going to be in Ezekiel chapter number 40. Now, last Sunday, we finished our study in Ezekiel 38 and 39, the Battle of Gog and Magog. I think we spent a total of 5 Sunday school lessons in the Battle of Gog and Magog. It's certainly one of the most exciting studies in the book of Ezekiel. For some people, that's the only thing they even study out of the book of Ezekiel because it has to do with end time prophecies and things that are still yet to come. Of course, you and I know that there are a lot of other good things in the book of Ezekiel because we've gotten almost all the way to the end of the book now. But the Battle of Gog and Magog is very interesting, not only because it deals with an end time event, but because it seems to play into the things going on in world affairs right now that are in the headlines. So if you didn't get to be here for all 5 lessons of the Battle of Gog and Magog, those are on the website for the church. You can go and listen to any that you might have missed. So that brings us to chapter 40. And we are now entering the last portion of the book of Ezekiel. Chapter 40 through 48 deals with a coming rebuilt temple in the land of Israel. And so these last few chapters all kind of go together. We're going to move through them a lot more quickly than we move through chapters 38 and 39. And I'm going to kind of break them down into 3 different parts. So chapter 40 through 42 deals specifically with the structure of this coming temple that's going to be built in the future. And so we're going to cover chapters 40 through 42 together as a block, and then we'll look at what's next following that. But this deals with the actual structure of the building, chapter 40, 41, and 42. But before we begin the verse-by-verse reading of chapter 40, I thought what we might do might be a benefit for us to rehearse for ourselves the different temples that have been built in Israel's history, so that we have an idea of what we're looking at coming up in chapter 40. So when we talk about the temples that Israel has used to worship God, the first temple was not really a temple per se, but it was the tabernacle. And the tabernacle, of course, was that mobile temple, the movable temple that they could take down, put back up, take down, put back up. God gave them the pattern for that at Mount Sinai when he gave Moses the Ten Commandments, and they built it after the pattern of the heavenly temple, the book of Moses tells us. And so the tabernacle will be the first temple in our list. Now, I don't claim to know the exact dates, but I'm going to give you the dates for each of these temples based upon the best guesstimates of people that are more knowledgeable about these historical things than I. I'm familiar with the history, but as far as how they date these things, there's a little bit of disagreement, but they're all pretty close to being the same. So the tabernacle served as the temple for Israel from about 1446 B.C. to 960 B.C. So, 1446 to 960 B.C. That, again, is an approximation. The tabernacle, of course, as I said, when they were wandering through the wilderness for 40 years, they took it with them wherever they went. They put it up, then they would take it down, move a little further, put it back up, take it down when they moved again. Once they got into the promised land, They set it up in one location, and it stayed in that location until it was replaced with the next temple. Does anyone remember the name of the location where they set up the tabernacle permanently once they got into the promised land? Well, I'll tell you this, there are a lot of Baptist churches that bear the same name as this geographical location. The tabernacle was set up in a place called Shiloh in the land of Israel. All right, so the tabernacle served as the temple for Israel from Mount Sinai until the next temple, which was the first real temple that was built, a permanent structure. So what is the first actual temple that was built in Israel? What's the name for it, or who built it? What do we know about it? Solomon's Temple, that's right, Lucy. So I'm going to put Solomon's Temple. It was really God's temple, but we're going to put Solomon's Temple here. And as you know, David, Solomon's father, wanted to build a permanent house of worship for God, but God said, nope, I'm not going to let you do it, but I'll let your son do it. What was the reason God told David that he would not be permitted to do it? He was a man of war with a lot of blood on his hands, and God said, I'll let you gather the materials for it, but your son will be the one to build it for me. And so David gathered all the materials, and he made arrangements with the king of Tyre to the north up in Lebanon to provide the cedars and other materials as well as workmen that would be needed in the construction of it. And when David passed away and Solomon became the king, it was in the fourth year of Solomon's reign, if memory serves me correctly, that they began actual construction on the temple, and then it took several years to complete. Solomon's temple served as the temple of Israel from 960 BC, that we already have on the board, which is an approximate time of the completion of it, until Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians destroyed it in the third siege of Jerusalem. Now, does anybody remember what the date was of that third and final siege of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar? Well, there were three different sieges. The first one was 605 BC, then 597 BC. Remember, our numbers are getting smaller as we get closer to the end of the BC era. So 605, 597, and then the third one was 586 BC. So Solomon's temple was approximately 960 BC to 586 BC. Those were the years that it served. And then the children of Israel went into captivity. They were there for 70 years. And then remember Cyrus, the Persian king. He gave the decree that they were allowed to go back to Jerusalem and rebuild the city, including the walls, and they were allowed to rebuild the temple there. Does anybody know the man who was in charge of the construction of the rebuilt temple after the exile? The next temple is named after him. This would be technically the second temple, because the tabernacle isn't really a temple. His name was Zerubbabel, and so if the preacher doesn't spell it correctly, no one's going to make fun of the preacher, right? Unless you want to come up. All right, Zerubbabel's temple. And so that temple was finished approximately 516 B.C., and it served as the temple until about 20 B.C. So 516 to 20 B.C. Now, in 20 B.C., at that point, the Romans had already conquered the land of Judea, made it one of their provinces, and they had appointed a family as the rulers of the province, who were not actually Jews. This was a family that actually ruled a neighboring former kingdom, and the Romans included both of their kingdoms and didn't choose a Jew to be over the province, but chose a family from this other place. What was this other nation that was joined together with Judah to form the province of Judea by the Romans? Remember, they were relatives of the Israelites. They weren't the Moabites. They weren't the Ammonites. They were the Edomites. And the ruling family of the Edomites at that time that were appointed by the Romans to be the puppet rulers of the Roman province of Judea was the Herod family, H-E-R-O-D. And so when Herod was appointed by the Romans, he wanted to do something to gain favor with the Jews, because after all, there were more Jews in the province than there were Edomites. And so wanting to gain favor with them, one of the things he did is he authorized a building project to add onto Zerubbabel's temple that was still standing. And so it's called Herod's temple, although it's still really the same temple as Zerubbabel's temple. It's the same one, but there were additions made onto it. And so that was from 20 BC when Herod the Great became the ruler of the province and initiated this construction program. This is the temple that was around in Jesus' day. It was a built onto version of Zerubbabel's temple, an expanded version of the temple. It was a larger temple than Zerubbabel's. And we know already from our studies in other books of the Bible, when was Herod's temple destroyed? That is, the temple that was around in Jesus' day, when was it destroyed? AD 70, that's right. We're out of the BCs now. We've passed the zero mark, if you would, and we're AD 70 is the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. And that's the one we know the most about from the studies that we've done. So those are all the temples that have existed previously. The tabernacle, Solomon's temple, Zerubbabel's temple, and then Herod's temple, if you want to call it a separate one, but it was really the same as Zerubbabel's. Those are all the temples that have existed up to today. When Zerubbabel's temple slash Herod's temple was destroyed by the Romans in AD 70, since then there has been no temple. The Jews today do not have a temple where they worship. They have rabbinic Judaism instead of temple Judaism today. But there's going to be a rebuilt temple. You and I have already talked about, both in the book of Ezekiel and in other Bible studies with other books of the Bible, when is the next temple that we know of, when is it going to be in existence?
Tribulation.
In the tribulation, that's right. And how do we know, Brother Don, that there's going to be a temple in Jerusalem during the tribulation period? That's exactly right. Because we know one of the things Jesus said in Matthew 24 and in a couple of other passages it hints at as well, that the Antichrist will set himself up to be worshipped in the holy place in the tribulation period. So we're just going to call this one the tribulation temple. It has not yet been built. So as far as the time, we're just going to put the tribulation down. Now, the reality is we know it exists during the tribulation. We know it exists at least by what point in the tribulation? When? The halfway mark, that's right. Because that's when the Antichrist breaks his covenant with Israel and sets himself up to be worshipped. But we don't really know when the temple is actually built. We know it exists by the midpoint of the tribulation, but it may be built at the beginning of the tribulation, there's a possibility it could be built before the tribulation even starts. That's right. It could even be built in our lifetime while we're still here before the Lord appears in the clouds and takes us up in the rapture. And so we don't know when it's going to be built, but we know it will exist during the tribulation. Now, that is the temple that the Jews in Israel today and the modern state of Israel is talking about rebuilding. And that's why they call it the Third Temple Movement, because it will be the actual third temple that the Jews have ever built. The first one was Solomon's. The second one was Zerubbabel's. This coming one will be the third temple. The Jews right now, as you know, are not only planning to rebuild the temple, we've talked about that a lot of times, they already have a class of priests that are in training to resume temple worship when it's built. They already have all the accoutrements, the instruments prepared that have been made to reinstitute temple worship. They've already, working with a rancher in Texas, they've bred a red heifer that meets the qualifications to be the first sacrifice in a rebuilt temple, to reinstitute temple worship and reinstitute the sacrificial system in that rebuilt temple. Does God want the Jews today to be worshiping Him by offering animal sacrifices? No. Because the book of Hebrews tells us very boldly, very plainly, that Jesus is the sacrifice. That's right. And that all those animal sacrifices under the Mosaic law and before that even were all pointing to the sacrifice that the perfect Lamb of God would make on the cross. So when the Jews reinstitute temple worship in this rebuilt third temple that's coming, it will be in rebellion against God, defiance against God, and a rejection of Jesus as the Messiah. Now, that's important because of something we're going to see about this coming temple we'll see at the end of Ezekiel. But that's the tribulation temple. It is built by the Jews in their rebellion to reinstitute their own form of Judaism that they were practicing in Jesus' day. And Jesus said they were of their father, the devil. They're still practicing the same form of Judaism today, but arguably worse form of it. But those are all the temples that have existed up to this point. Now, when we finished Ezekiel 38 and 39 last week and the battle of Gog and Magog, we saw that after the tribulation is over with, and maybe even starting before the tribulation ends, God begins to do a work in the hearts of the Jews that are still alive at the end of the tribulation. And when we get to the very end of the tribulation, all the Jews that are still alive are going to believe on Jesus as their Messiah, cry out to Him. That's when He will split the eastern sky. That's when the actual second coming occurs, and He destroys all of His enemies at the Battle of Armageddon and begins that 1,000-year literal reign of Christ, the millennium, that's right. There's going to be a temple built in Jerusalem during that millennium. I say there's going to be a temple built. There's going to be a temple that's going to exist during the millennium. We know that because, first of all, in the book of Revelation, in the millennium, we see temple worship going on. Revelation tells us that. Zechariah tells us that. Isaiah tells us that. And Ezekiel tells us that. The temple we are about to see for these last nine chapters of Ezekiel, 40 through 48, have to do with a rebuilt temple, but it's not the temple of the tribulation period. this is going to be a totally different temple, and you're going to see the proof of it in just a few minutes. The temple we're going to see in these chapters is yet another temple in Jerusalem, so we could call it the fourth temple, and we'll just call it the millennial temple. And it will be the temple that will exist in Jerusalem for the 1,000 years, and Jesus will be the one responsible for it being built. Now, again, I know this is all introduction. We haven't even read the first verse of chapter 40 yet, but we're going to move lightning fast through chapters 40, 41, and 42 once we start. Because it's a lot of technical things about the size of this and the size of that, similar to what it was with the tabernacle when we went through the book of Exodus. So we're going to move quickly. But I want us to see two other passages from the Old Testament that talk about this temple that we're about to read about in Ezekiel, this coming millennial temple. So hold your place at Ezekiel 40 and turn back with me, if you would, to Isaiah chapter 2. The book of Isaiah chapter 2. All right. If you don't have your place, you can just listen. I'm only going to read one verse. Actually, a couple of verses here, but Isaiah 2 verse 1 says, "The word that Isaiah the son of Amoz saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. And it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow into it." Now, has there ever been a temple in Israel's history when all the nations of the earth came up to worship at the temple? No, no. Verse 3 says, "And many people shall go and say, come ye, and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us his ways, and we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And he shall judge among the nations, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore." Now, has that ever yet happened? No. And it's not going to happen during the tribulation either. So this is clearly also a description of the millennial temple after the tribulation. All right, one other Old Testament passage. Past the book of Ezekiel, go to Zechariah, next to the last book of the Old Testament, Zechariah chapter 6. Zechariah is one of my favorite books of prophecy of the Old Testament, because even though it's not one of the major prophets because of the length of it, it has some information that we don't find anywhere else in the Old Testament, that things that have to do with the end time events. And in Zechariah 6, look with me beginning at verse 12. "And speak unto him, saying, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, behold, the man whose name is the branch." Now, who is that person known as the branch? Jesus, that's right. The Messiah, that's right. Remember, he's the branch of Jesse and the root of Jesse. All right? "And he shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of the Lord. Even he shall build the temple of the Lord, and he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne. And he shall be a priest upon his throne. And the council of peace shall be between them both. And the crown shall be to Helam, and to Tobijah, and to Jediah, and to Hen the son of Zephaniah, for a memorial in the temple of the Lord. And they that are far off shall come and build in the temple of the Lord. And ye shall know that I am the Lord of hosts, that the Lord of hosts hath sent me unto you. And this shall come to pass, if ye will diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God. All right, so again, this is clearly not a temple that exists during the tribulation period. And it's not any of those that have existed before now. So this also is a picture of the millennial temple. And it says Jesus will be the one responsible for overseeing the building of it. And so this is the millennial temple that we just read about. All right, so now here we are in Ezekiel 40. Now, I'm going to make a few comments after reading chapter 40, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to read all of chapter 40 before I stop. I know that's not what we normally do, but you're going to see as I begin, it's a lot of measurements of different things. So let me read all of it, then I'll mention a few things about it. Chapter 40, verse 1. In the 25th year of our captivity, in the beginning of the year, in the 10th day of the month, in the 14th year after that the city was smitten, in the selfsame day the hand of the Lord was upon me and brought me thither. In the visions of God brought he me into the land of Israel and set me upon a very high mountain, by which was as the frame of a city on the south. And he brought me thither, and behold, there was a man whose appearance was like the appearance of brass, with a line of flax in his hand and a measuring reed, and he stood in the gate. Verse 4, and the man said unto me, Son of man, behold with thine eyes, and hear with thine ears, and set thine heart upon all that I have that I shall show thee. For to the intent that I might show them unto thee art thou brought hither. Declare all that thou seest to the house of Israel. And behold, a wall on the outside of the house round about, and in the man's hand a measuring reed of 6 cubits long by the cubit, and an hand breadth. So he measured the breadth of the building, 1 reed, and the height, 1 reed. Then came he unto the gate which looketh toward the east, and went up to the stairs thereof, and measured the threshold of the gate, which was 1 reed broad, and the other threshold of the gate, which was 1 reed broad. And every little chamber was 1 reed long, and 1 reed broad. And between the little chambers were 5 cubits. And the threshold of the gate by the porch of the gate within was 1 reed. He measured also the porch of the gate within, 1 reed. Then measured he the porch of the gate, 8 cubits, and the post thereof, 2 cubits, and the porch of the gate was inward. And the little chambers of the gate eastward were 3 on this side and 3 on that side. They 3 were of 1 measure, and the post had 1 measure on this side and on that side. And he measured the breadth of the entry of the gate, 10 cubits, and the length of the gate, 13 cubits. The space also before the little chambers was 1 cubit on this side, and the little space was 1 cubit on that side, and the little chambers were 6 cubits on this side and 6 cubits on that side. He measured then the gate from the roof of one little chamber to the roof of another. The breadth was 25 cubits, door against door. He made also posts of 60 cubits, even unto the post of the court round about the gate. And from the face of the gate of the entrance unto the face of the porch of the inner gate were 50 cubits. And there were narrow windows to the little chambers and to their posts within the gate round about, and likewise to the arches. And windows were round about inward, and upon each post were palm trees. Then brought he me into the outer court, and lo, there were chambers, and a pavement made for the court round about. 30 chambers were upon the pavement, and the pavement by the side of the gates over against the length of the gates was the lower pavement. Then he measured the breadth from the forefront of the lower gate unto the forefront of the inner gate without, inner court without, and 100 cubits eastward and northward. And the gate of the outward court that looked toward the north, he measured the length thereof and the breadth thereof. And the little chambers thereof were three on this side and three on that side. And the posts thereof and the arches thereof were after the measure of the first gate. The length thereof was 50 cubits, and the breadth 25 cubits. And their windows and their arches and their palm trees were after the measure of the gate that looked toward the east. And they went up unto it by 7 steps, and the arches thereof were before them. And the gate of the inner court was over against the gate toward the north and toward the east, and he measured from gate to gate 100 cubits. After that he brought me toward the south, and behold a gate toward the south, and he measured the posts thereof and the arches thereof according to these measures, and there were windows in it in the arches thereof round about, like those windows. The length was 50 cubits, and the breadth 25 cubits, and there were 7 steps to go up to it, and the arches thereof were before them, and it had palm trees, one on this side and another on that side, upon the posts thereof. And there was a gate in the inner court toward the south, and he measured from gate to gate toward the south 100 cubits. And he brought me to the inner court by the south gate, and he measured the south gate according to these measures, and the little chambers thereof, and the posts thereof, and the arches thereof, according to these measures. And there were windows in it, and in the arches thereof round about. It was 50 cubits long, and 25 cubits broad. And the arches round about were 25 cubits long, and 5 cubits broad. And the arches thereof were toward the utter court. And palm trees were upon the posts thereof, and the going up to it had 8 steps. Verse 32, and he brought me into the inner court toward the east, and he measured the gate according to these measures. And the little chambers thereof, and the posts thereof, and the arches thereof were according to these measures. And there were windows therein, and in the arches thereof round about. It was 50 cubits long, and 25 cubits broad. And the arches thereof were toward the outward court. And palm trees were upon the posts thereof, on this side and on that side, and the going up to it had 8 steps. And he brought me to the north gate, and measured it according to these measures, the little chambers thereof, the posts thereof, and the arches thereof, and the windows to it round about. The length was 50 cubits, and the breadth 25 cubits. And the posts thereof were toward the utter court. And palm trees were upon the posts thereof on this side and on that side, and the going up to it had 8 steps. And the chamber and the entries thereof were by the posts of the gates, where they washed the burnt offering. And in the porch of the gate were 2 tables on this side and 2 tables on that side, to slay thereon the burnt offering and the sin offering and the trespass offering. And at the side without, as one goeth up to the entry of the north gate, were 2 tables. And on the other side, which was at the porch of the gate, were 2 tables. 4 tables were on this side, and 4 tables on that side, by the side of the gate. 8 tables, whereupon they slew their sacrifices. And the 4 tables were of hewn stone for the burnt offering, of 1.5 cubits long, and 1.5 cubits broad, and 1 cubit high. Whereupon also they laid the instruments wherewith they slew the burnt offering and the sacrifice. And within were hooks and hand broad, fastened round about, and upon the tables was the flesh of the offering. And without the inner gate, that means outside, were the chambers of the singers in the inner court, which was at the side of the north gate. And their prospect, that is looking toward, was toward the south. One at the side of the east gate, having the prospect toward the north. And he said unto me, this chamber, whose prospect is toward the south, is for the priests, the keepers of the charge of the house. And the chamber, whose prospect is toward the north, is for the priests, the keepers of the charge of the altar. These are the sons of Zadok, among the sons of Levi, which come near to the Lord to minister unto him. So he measured the court 100 cubits long and 100 cubits broad, 4 square, and the altar that was before the house. And he brought me to the porch of the house and measured each post of the porch, 5 cubits on this side and 5 cubits on that side. And the breadth of the gate was 3 cubits on this side and 3 cubits on that side. The length of the porch was 20 cubits and the breadth 11 cubits. And he brought me by the steps whereby they went up to it. And there were pillars by the post, one on this side and another on that side. All right, that's a lot of reading, by the way. All right, so this is part, not all, of the measurements of the temple that will be rebuilt during the millennium. Now, I know you didn't take in any of what that looks like because we were reading through it quickly. My intention next week, part of what we're going to do is I'm going to show you a video that, not one that I put together because I don't have the technological know-how to do it, but a video that I found online that is well done that shows a verse-by-verse explanation of everything we read here about the construction of it, similar to the video we watched about the tabernacle when we were in the book of Exodus, how it showed piece by piece as they put it together and put it up. You'll be able to see it visually for yourself. It'll make a lot more sense to you. But as I finish this morning, though, I want to point out just a couple of things. The things that I want to mention are that, first of all, this is a vision that Ezekiel is seeing. God takes him in a vision and puts him at a place that's just north of this temple in the land of Israel. And when he's looking down at it from this high mountain, at first he says it looks like a city to him. It looks like it's laid out like a city. It's so, in other words, it's so huge, he thought it was a city he was looking at. But then the guide shows him that it's not a city, it's a temple. And it says here that the guide, verse 3, he brought me thither, and behold, there was a man whose appearance was like the appearance of brass. This guide is either an angel or the angel of the Lord. I don't know which. I personally think it is an angel of the Lord, not the angel of the Lord, not a pre-incarnate appearance of Christ, just an angel. In Scripture, brass, as we've seen previously, oftentimes is a picture of judgment, but it's also used throughout the Old Testament to represent something strong. Another example of this would be the firmament. The firmament is mentioned as being strong as a molten looking glass, like brass. So this guide's appearance is as brass. He's got two things in his hand to measure with. One of them is a line of flax in his hand. It's just like a rope. And then the other thing that he has is a measuring rod, kind of like a yardstick. And the things he's measuring with, he's using the yardstick for the shorter things, and the rope he's using to measure the long things. Most of the time when things were built that are recorded in the Bible, their dimensions, and we're given the length of them in cubits, the cubit is this distance from the tip of your middle finger to the tip of the elbow. That's a cubit. It's about 18 inches on the average man. This, we are specifically told, these are not regular cubits. This is a cubit and a hand breadth. This is a hand breadth, the width across the fingers. It's called a royal cubit. It's the 18 inches plus this distance. And that distance is usually calculated to be about 3 additional inches. So instead of an 18-inch cubit, the temple's being measured in 21-inch cubits. That means it's going to be larger than if we just multiply it times 18 inches. The reason that most Bible scholars believe that the royal cubit is being used here is because it is a distinction that this building is not for common use buildings. This is for God. And this temple, above all the other temples, is to stand out separate from all the others. So I know we haven't talked about the dimensions yet. We're going to. We also read some things in here about animal sacrifices in the millennial temple. And we've already just got finished saying this morning that the Jews are in rebellion for wanting to reinstitute animal sacrifices in the tribulation temple. So then we're going to have to talk about, well, if the millennial temple is rebuilt by Christ himself and they're offering animal sacrifices, why? And why is it okay to do it then, but not in the tribulation temple? And what's the purpose for it if Christ is the end of the sacrifices for sin that the book of Hebrew tells us about? So there's obviously something really significantly different between the tribulation temple and those sacrifices and the sacrifices that will be offered in the millennial temple. Lots of exciting things in these last few chapters. You don't want to miss it. It's going to be just as good as the stuff we've already seen in the book of Ezekiel. Lord, thank you for an opportunity to study the book of Ezekiel. Lord, help us not to just gloss over the things that we're reading. Lord, help us to understand what it says and the significance of these things, we pray. In Jesus' name, amen.